How Proust Can Change Your Life became a bestseller a few years ago, and the critically acclaimed book transformed its author into a dispenser of self-help for the literary set. Writer Alain de Botton's latest effort is The Art of Travel. Once again, he draws lessons for modern life from the fine writing of an earlier time. Here, both literature and travel writing from the 18th and 19th centuries. The author's personal travel stories suffer mightily from proximity to the delightful tales offered by earlier travelers. A tiff with a girlfriend on holiday in Barbados can seem painfully shallow when compared to Alexander von Humboldt's trip to South America 200 years ago, where he identified 600 new plant species, or Flaubert's youthful sojourn in Egypt. And then there's the story of a 19th century fictional duke who loved to travel as long as it didn't require actually leaving the house.
He's a very odd character who basically decides that traveling isn't really worth it. So instead of going traveling, what he's going to do is sit at home trying to get the best bits out of travel, which he thinks are the anticipation bits. So he installs a sail in his bedroom, which he can flap around to try and evoke for him the pleasures of a long sea journey. He also has a jar of seawater brought into his thing. So he likes to smell the sea, and that evokes the pleasures of the seaside. He looks at timetables of trains and ships. And I use that just to make that point that there is a way in which sometimes the anticipation of a vacation is better than the reality.
Eccentric, yes, but author Alain de Botton says the Duke embodies one of the contradictions inherent in traveling for pleasure, the real possibility of experiencing the opposite.
Going traveling is one of the few times in life when we actually set out to be happy. Most of the time, let's say we're raising kids or making a living. If we're unhappy in those activities, we tell ourselves, well, you know, I'm doing something else. But when we go on vacation, we're actually doing so in order to try and be happy. And that's why there's a particular kind of unhappiness that kicks in on our journeys, because we're not just unhappy, we're unhappy that we're unhappy. What goes wrong when we travel? Traveling is such a fantasy for so many people, along with love, maybe, along with falling in love. You know, going on a journey is sort of people's number one idea of how you might suddenly become much, much happier than you were.
What does go wrong beyond the superficial? And everyone knows,
yeah, sure,
traveling involves, you know, missed connections and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
But from your point of view, what are the things that go wrong?
Well, a very basic thing that goes wrong is that when we anticipate going to a place, we tend to forget that we're going to have to go along to it as well. So one of the problems is we can't leave ourselves behind. What do I mean by ourselves? I mean the kind of person who's always worrying about the future, regretting the past, the whole welter of anxieties and thoughts that make living with oneself difficult day to day. All that's going to come with you to that idyllic paradise island or the wonderful, you know, mountains of the Alps or wherever it happens to be. So I think that a lot of the fantasy behind travel is a desire to be someone other than we are in daily life. It's not enough just to change your location. Your psychology has to be worked on as well.
Now, some of what you write in The Art of Travel can be reduced to tips. I mean, very useful and very literary tips, but nonetheless, things one might try. And one of them had to do with leaving the guidebook in the suitcase. And you're speaking from a trip you made to Madrid. And why don't you read just a little bit of that?
Right, yeah. And this is where I decide to break free from the guidebook and get interested in what I want rather than what the Michelin Street Guide to Madrid is telling me I should get interested in. I had 3-star levels of interest in the underrepresentation of vegetables in the Spanish diet. During the last proper meal I'd eaten, only a few limp, bleached, and apparently tinned spears of asparagus had appeared between a succession of meat dishes, and the long and noble-sounding surnames of ordinary citizens. The assistant in charge of organizing a conference I'd been to had owned a train of surnames connected by de and la, a name that suggested an ancestral castle, faithful servants, an old well and a coat of arms, a projection in sharp contrast with the reality of her life, a dust-coated car and a studio flat near the airport. I was interested in the smallness of Spanish men's feet.
None of that would be found in the Michelin or any other guidebook, but actually tourist guides can have the opposite effect. I mean, they oftentimes add a story to what might, for most people, be merely a sight. But you kind of give another sort of suggestion. You say maybe it would be a good idea to study visual art.
Yes, a lot of people want to see Paris because they've seen all those nice impressionist postcards of Parisian sights. There's a famous quote by Oscar Wilde where he said that there was no fog in London, a famously foggy city. Oscar Wilde said there was no fog in London at all until the American painter James Whistler started painting London. And of course, there was fog in London. It's just that people didn't really know how to see it. And I think that really captures the way in which certain paintings and works of art just, they're very subtle ways almost of saying, you know, look at that fog, you know, isn't it amazing? And sometimes we need the nudge of an artist or painter to just get us to notice it.
You know, my favorite part of this book has to do with the journey itself, because that applies to the most mundane trips we might take to the most unexotic places. And you have a great line which could apply to anyone except maybe a parent with a squirming baby on her lap. Journeys are the midwives of thought.
Yes. I mean, in my view, I think that one of the nicest things to do on a journey is just the act of traveling, not necessarily getting anywhere, is a wonderful way to spark off thoughts. And I think it's often on a train or on a plane that you're able to just stand back from your ordinary life and just look at things from a slightly higher altitude, as it were. And all sorts of thoughts and memories often bubble to the surface that don't get a chance in the ordinary kind of press of life.
Which in the end brings you to the best insight of all, which is essentially to treat your regular life as travel. Because travel's right. Not going to substitute for it, and it's not even going to rise to your imagination.
That's right. And I look at the odd work of this strange 19th century Frenchman called Xavier de Maistre, who wrote a little known but wonderful book called Journey Around My Bedroom. And the point of this book was really to say, you know, it doesn't really matter how far you travel. What really matters is the way you look at the world. So basically, the point was to throw the emphasis on a way of traveling rather than just a kind of destination of travel. And he's basically saying, you know, if you look at things in the right way, your own bedroom could be as interesting as faraway lands. He wrote a follow-up. The book was a great success, and he wrote a follow-up called Journey to My Windowsill, in which he also explored the charms of the windowsill. He was pushing a very sensible point to an absurdity, but I think there is something sensible in that, which is it's not so much where you go, it's how you look at it.
Alain de Botton's new book is called The Art of Travel.